In the last episode, we looked at transitioning out of treatment and into college. We now turn our attention to a cutting-edge therapy for kids with alt psych and learning profiles, MRT, or magnetic resonance therapy, to retrain the brain. I'll be joined today by Greg Pauletti of RCHI Group and the brand new Changing Minds organization. After completing his master's in counseling at Pace University, Greg was trained by a preeminent scholar in the field of cognitive remediation, Dr. Alice Medelia from Columbia University, in the NEAR model of cognitive remediation. He went on to help develop and direct first non-residential cognitive remediation program in Connecticut. Greg lives with his wife and four children in Greenwich, Connecticut. He co-founded and is president of the Golden Lights Foundation, a charity which raises money for pediatric cancer research. And he also serves on the board of human services for the town of Greenwich. Greg is the founder of Changing Minds of Stanford, highlighted by emergent MRT treatment. MRT treats specific brain patterns and quite literally reprograms the brain. Greg, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you here today.
Appreciate you having me, Alex. Thank you.
And Tobias, a surprise guest. Thank you very much for being with us as well.
Hey, Alex. Hey, Greg. Happy to be here.
So why don't we start with Greg? Can you kind of explain your background? And specifically, I'm interested in how you became involved in MRT.
So my background is a combination of things. I work with young adults and have been focusing mostly on, you know, the 16 to 20 something year olds, helping the college process and really specifically working with young adults who have a history of mental health challenges, and that kind of is across the board from ADHD to more serious mental health concerns like bipolar or schizophrenia. And part of what I do is something called cognitive remediation. So I was kind of really familiar with addressing cognitive impairment and helping people improve in those areas. And ultimately, the whole purpose of what I do is to increase a person's ability to kind of have everyday increased functionality and kind of be able to make the most of their life, whatever that is.
Could you briefly just detail what cognitive remediation means and kind of what you've done with that traditionally?
Yeah, cognitive remediation is a field that was started for individuals who mostly have experienced psychosis and psychotic disorders, which a part of that, those disorders, is a decrease in cognition, a level of impairment that occurs. And so cognitive remediation started to address the core cognitive domains that are associated with dysfunction. So we're talking about like increasing processing speed, increasing performance and attention and working memory and verbal and visual learning. And when you increase those areas, you see a level of functioning with those individuals, you know, all of a sudden they're able to go back to work, they're able to go to school again, able to take care of themselves independently versus not being able to do those things and you know, kind of struggling within the system and you know, being supported by others. So we really, the goal with cognitive remediation is to get people to be independent again.
And Tobias, could you give us a little bit of your background too, and specifically how you got into MRT?
So I'm a psychiatrist by training. So I'm medically trained. I spent a good bit of time doing research before going to residency. Then even during residency, a lot focused first on electrophysiology, then epigenetics, and looking deeper into serious mental illness like schizophrenia. And then I veered off from that a little bit and started a family and kind of have to pay the bills, and research is not always the easiest for that. But I do love my clinical work. And as a psychiatrist, I also really know the limits of what I can do. And I really like to use a toolbox, right? I don't like to just prescribe medication. I think that works very, very well together with other modalities such as psychotherapy, like cognitive remediation, be another tool. I see those as tools. And we so far have imperfect treatments specifically for serious mental illness. But even as such a thing like ADHD, right? I do think just a medication is falling short. And so bottom line, I knew about neuromodulation, obviously. But then really by sheer circumstance, Greg was working with me to help a patient who has serious mental illness, and he's doing the cognitive remediation part. you know, talking about schizophrenia, and, you know, like that's a big part of it. And I do the classic medication, the antipsychotic, in my doctor part. And he told me about this interest, this company that he founded together with Steve. And so I looked deeper into that, and I was like, hey, you've been sleeping. You've been not realizing that TMS has made a big jump ahead, which was an eye-opener. And I spoke with the two of them, with Greg and Steve, and I was very interested in becoming a part of that.
I want to circle back to something you said, because I think it's kind of important to perhaps this crowd that we're talking to now. Specifically, you mentioned ADHD and medication, and I would say probably every other kid has had some experience, you know, or other with Adderall, whatever the attention drugs are. But I sense in the community a rising sort of dissatisfaction with just kind of drugging them. And that feeling like sort of a Band-Aid and like something that's perhaps not serving them in the long term.
Yeah.
So this is something basically that can treat perhaps underlying causes of ADHD?
I would think so. I've been thinking a lot how to put this form of treatment, you know, like in an analogy that makes it easier to grasp or understand. And I often think about it as, you know, if you have a piano, if you play the piano, right, you can play a song on a piano that's out of tune. You will still recognize the song, right? But there's something not quite right because it's out of tune, right? And so once you get it back in tune, it's a whole other experience, right? It's the same song, but it will sound marvelous, beautiful, you know, like harmonic, right? And so in a way, our brain has its own tune. Actually, it has different tunes for different times, but they help to put the different parts of our brain together and harmonize them and get them in sync. And so that can be disrupted, or that might not happen for various reasons. You know, a very typical example, or like easy to understand example, would be a concussion. So like really an injury. But ADHD is also, you know, a similar case where processing doesn't happen in a harmonic way, in an efficient way. And I mean, I want to be real about you. ADHD medications, they clearly have an effect. They have a pretty good effect size, but
for a while.
Well, that's why, you know, like a lot of people take breaks, right? A lot of people stop giving it to their kids over the vacation because, you know, like you kind of been resensitized a little bit. That's a thought. But yes, they have drawbacks because a lot of things we do with medication, you know, like we're bathing a whole human brain in a certain chemical substance. And that does not only affect the areas that we want to target. So location is the key, right? And really localized approaches to treatment, there are not so many around.
Right. Greg, maybe you could just tell us, what is MERT? Just give us an overview from your perspective, you know, to someone who's never had experience with this type of treatment before. What is it?
Yeah, so MERT is actually the acronym, right? So it stands for Magnetic E-Resonance Therapy. Or another way of saying it is, we talked about TMS before. MERT can also be called synchronized TMS or synchronized transmagnetic stimulation. So what MERT is doing is it's taking an electromagnetic pulse and, you know, sending that through a coil against your brain. And that sounds maybe a little bit barbaric and strange in many respects, but it's very gentle, actually. And it's done at a frequency that's matching a person's normal brain alpha frequency. And that's actually what makes it really effective, because we're using an EEG electroencephalogram to get a picture of what's going on within a person's brain. And you can very clearly see kind of the differences between what Tobias or a doctor might say, like a neurotypical brain versus someone who might have, you know, ADHD or anxiety or depression or trauma in some way. And MERT is flexible enough to allow us to treat the specific location or target a specific location at a person's natural frequency and at an intensity that is safe and still effective versus traditional TMS, which is fixed, right? It's at one frequency, it's at one location, and it's at one intensity, which is much higher than what MERT would do. So MERT is a safe, non-invasive, non-pharmaceutical alternative for individuals who are living with depression or anxiety or ADHD or PTSD. And that's the most critical piece of this. That it is safe and that it's, you know, an alternative to traditional treatments that people might try. And it's 78% effective.
So Tobias, say I'm signing up for this service, what does that look like exactly, specifically? I mean, I've actually tried it. I've been to your center and I tried it. So I do know a little bit about it. But if I'm just kind of a stranger walking into this, what's a brief sort of overview of what I'd be looking at?
So first, we'd like to get a status quo of how your brain is doing. And the best way for us to do that is to do a quick, painless brain scan. So we do an EEG. And by that, we record the electrical activity of your brain's cortex. It takes only 10 minutes. And we have a pretty advanced headset that allows us to get this done within a short amount of time without much preparation. The only task you have in those 10 minutes is to close your eyes, not fall asleep, and to just sit still as you can. So that's easy. Pretty doable for most people. Actually, sounds like a dream for some. To me, it sounds like amazing. And we take that information, and there's a bit of AI-guided processing, computational processing, because what we want to do is we want to understand, during those 10 minutes, what frequency is your brain operating in most of the time? It's like one of the big questions, you know, like, so we get a scan result back that divvies up your brain, your cortex, in three areas, front, middle, and back. And again, we see like what frequency is your brain spending most time in, right? And Wave Neuro, who pioneered this technique, have tens of thousands of scans that they can compare that to. And so we have a good idea about what's neurotypical. You know, we know that in a resting state, we do a resting state EEG, you should have mainly alpha activity, alpha frequency activity. We know how that should look like. And based on scans that have been done with patients having traumatic brain injury, PTSD, anxiety, we know that that can look different, right? There can be slowing. There can be asynchrony. There can be so-called flags. Flags is something that diverts from the neurotypical that we can change through treatment. So step A, 10 minutes of your time, get a scan done, doesn't hurt. After a bit of time, we get the result back. We would talk about the result with you and explain where the areas where we can treat. If you have a beautiful neurotypical EEG, I would probably say like, well, I'm not sure how much we can help in changing this specific EEG because it already looks very neurotypical. So I wouldn't want to treat someone where I don't have a clear goal. And goal, I mean specifically in the EEG, because we want to change the EEG. And we obviously want to change whatever issue is getting in your way, but we want to change the EEG because like that's what we can measure. So I'll talk to you. I'll figure out if it's medically safe. And, you know, I'm not going to go too much. Maybe we can go into that in a little bit, but, you know, there are not really a whole bunch of contraindications that would stand against you receiving this form of treatment.
Greg, just stepping back for a second, could you tell me, you know, why you really started this, you know, this treatment? Did you see a sort of gap in the market, you know, a gap in treatment for kids? You know, why changing minds?
That's a great question. You know, there are a number of reasons, but one big kind of glaring problem I was seeing within mental health largely, but also personally in people who I know, is one thing we already touched on. There are very few effective non-pharmacological approaches to mental health in general, right? You know, there are certain mental health disorders that, and Tobias knows better than me, obviously, as being a psychiatrist, but you need pharmacological approaches. You need the medication. But there are others, like perhaps anxiety or depression or ADHD, that there are really effective treatments, but they're very long-term, very intensive, and there aren't really many alternatives. And when this came across me, and I'm working with a lot of students who have ADHD and have a number of really big challenges.
Let me just interrupt you there. Sorry. What type of challenges are we talking about? So what type of kid would this
be? Good. Good question. For? Yeah. I mean, we're talking about executive functioning challenges. We're talking about, you know, rigidity, some impulsivity. We're talking about, you know, students who sometimes they can be forgetful or have some anxiety about being, you know, going to class. And there's also depression thrown in there as well. But you're dealing with these things that kind of affect them on an everyday level, and they're not able to effectively work with me. So really, going back to the crux of your questions, I'm not able to effectively work with the students who I'm working with, because you have these layers of things that are already going on. And when I saw how effective MERT was, literally like opening the door for these students to then be able to be receptive of some of the tools that I'm trying to give them and the strategies that I'm trying to give them. My work as a consultant and someone who works with students was becoming that much more effective. And that's really where the power behind MERT is not the treatment itself. It's how it allows someone to now be accessible in all the other areas of life that they're experiencing.
Here are a few thoughts after the first segment of my conversation with Greg and Tobias. First, I just want to paint a picture for you of what it's like going to this facility, which I did myself a few weeks back, and it's really pretty cool. It's a nice suite, it's about 3 different rooms, common area, and one side they do the diagnostics, and the other they actually do the treatment itself. A very congenial sort of vibe there, I guess, is what stuck out to me. It didn't feel like going to a doctor's office. It was very conversational and casual. And, I think that's helpful in warming up to something that's new and radical and perhaps a little intimidating if you're sort of not familiar with the technology. And that really is something that I've noticed with a lot of these emergent technologies is that there's a lot of value in them, and yet there's a reticence to really jump in and experiment with them, especially when you're talking about your own kids, because the lack of social knowledge about those new therapies, regardless of the value that they provide. So that definitely stuck out to me. The comfort factor really is being kind of a key to getting started in this type of therapy. The second thing that really stuck out as a theme was that discussion of medication and what its role has been traditionally in kids, particularly for ADHD. And I'd say that as parents of kids in this generation, pretty much every other one of them has had some sort of experience with medication of one kind or the other, particularly Adderall or other ADHD medication. Now, medication is a temporary fix and an effective one. Much like a Band-Aid is very effective in stopping a wound. However, it doesn't really do much for the underlying condition, nor does it really work to resolve that issue at all. The last thing that parents want is for that to become some sort of crutch for the future for that student. So I guess what appeals to me most about MERT is the fact that it is permanent and a long-lasting solution that is non-medical. It's not a medication. It's not pharmacological. It does not involve that chemically altering of your brain. But they did, at the same time, emphasize that it is one tool in the tool chest, and it's not meant to really replace anything else, but really to make your brain more efficient at taking on information, to taking on the other sort of modalities that are helpful in dealing with kids that have alternative learning and psych profiles. So it's a pretty effective tool, in my experience and what I understand of it. But it is just one tool, and I think they're aware of that. And I think, willing and able to work in a team really in bettering the lives of these kids significantly. And I think it does act as a catalyst in a lot of cases. We talked previously about kind of the purpose of it and, who it's designed for and what all the diagnostic sort of components of it are. Now, Tobias, once you get past that sort of diagnostic phase and you determine, well, there's some irregularities here and perhaps some room for improvement, what does the therapy itself look like? How often do you need to go? And take us through that.
So for treatment, we need 30 minutes of your time. That's each treatment lasts about 30 minutes. And during that treatment, you would get this repeating magnetic pulse, like a burst of magnetic pulses, and it lasts about 30 minutes. 30 minutes, you're out. You can go about your day as you please, because the side effects are really minimal. You need to do that, we like you to get as close as you can to 5 treatments a week. Now, clearly, 5 treatments, 30 minutes a week is not easy. People are busy. There's a lot to do. There's enough data that we can say if we get it done 3 times a week, we're confident that we get results, that we get comparable results. I always say try to get as many treatments as you can get in. Try to get as close to the five. But again, it's not breaking the bank if you are breaking treatment, if you're having three treatments a week. We need about 20 treatments total to have results stick so that they are durable, permanent.
Oh, so they're permanent changes.
Yes.
After 20 treatments. Now, do you start to see some impacts almost immediately, or how long does it take to sort of start seeing some results?
I would say that people will start noticing differences end of the first week into the second week. Sometimes that can feel very innocuous, just like, hey, I'm sleeping better, which for some people is a big thing. You know, I would say it's probably going to come in subtle. And we do expect changes to happen throughout treatment, you know, because what we do is we ease people in, even, you know, with the lower intensity that we have compared to TMS, we still ease people in because we want to really make it a good experience and, you know, like we'll take it slow. So we slowly get to our goal intensity. And once we're there, you know, like that's usually close to the 2 week mark, right? We're getting to goal intensity like in the second week.
Well, and let me just expand on that too. When you say goal intensity, there's a kind of a dial, I think, that you turn up and it intensifies.
It is literally a dial. Yeah. Yeah. It is literally the dial that is based on your motor threshold. So how much magnetic intensity or how strong of a magnetic pulse do I have to aim at your motor cortex to produce a single twitch in your contralateral arm? And then that's your motor threshold. And then we dial it back to a safe level. I think you've seen it. It's completely painless. You know, like you just feel.
I was pulsed. Yes.
Yeah. You get pulsed. You know, you just feel it. Wait, why am I twitching? It's one twitch. It's not painful, you know. Yeah. But
well, it's like
that's how we.
The hammer at the doctor.
Yeah, like the reflex hammer. You can't really control it. It's that weird feeling. But we want to stay below that because we do not want to have people twitching, obviously.
And we stay well below. I think that's really important.
We stay well below that. And so for us, but because it's all individualized, right? We want to determine what is your individual goal intensity. Just like we want to know what is your individual alpha frequency. Where is the location where we need to place the magnet? We have some play and some decisions to make here because we have the whole brain, right? Like TMS uses one entry, and that's usually the left dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. It's a mouthful, but that's their one entry point. And conceptually, there's no reason why there aren't other entry points into the connectome, into the connectivity.
We're talking about a helmet that you're wearing here, right? Which is a helmet?
The helmet is for the EEG. So the helmet is for the EEG. For the treatment, it's a magnetic coil. It's going to move for a second right now, but the magnetic coil looks literally like this here. Like that's my hand in comparison, you know? So it looks like a butterfly or like that's actually the name for it. And you have this on your forehead. If we had done that, our recording just a little bit earlier, you would have seen me on that chair getting that treatment. And it's placed right here. Yeah, it sits on your forehead. It's a very comfy chair. If you want, you can check your email while you're doing that. The only thing you have to do, you hear a chime and then you want to close your eyes and you don't want to fall asleep and you're done in 30 minutes. Again, it's very well tolerated. The only things that you sometimes might experience in the first week is maybe a bit of a headache. That can happen. It's not because your brain hurts. It's literally because the facial muscles are sitting right under that coil and they get actually a little bit excited. But you can either massage it out or, you know, like take a Tylenol. That's fine. You don't do anything because you get used to it. It just doesn't come anywhere. Your body gets used to it.
So, Greg, if I was like a young client doing this, you know, therapy with ADHD, you know, what would that kind of process look like for me? And like, what type of results would I see so far in what you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I would be a fool to predict results, but what's going to happen is there needs to be two things that are at play. One is there has to be something that the client or young person perceives as being the issue, the problem, right? If it's ADHD, you know, maybe it's impulsivity or lack of ability to pay attention in the classroom or lecture or being, you know, completely disorganized and having executive functioning problems, something like that, right? Yeah. And then that needs to match with what the scan, the brain health assessment, or, you know, the scan that Tobias reads showing like there is something there that could be improved upon, right? And then once those two things, once we kind of get an idea of what's going on there, then if treatment is done, we are actually seeing, with Tobias said, within the first week or two, you know, it's around 10 sessions, people are starting to feel noticeably different. And that might be, you know, something as innocuous as like being less forgetful, like being more organized, being able to stay on task for longer periods of time, you know, for things that, for especially with ADHD, right? One of the hardest things for a person with ADHD is to start a task, especially a task that they're not really particularly interested in, and then see it through to completion. And they might notice like, oh, why? I just spent 20 more minutes on something that I had no interest in doing, but I worked through it no matter what. And then finally, a bigger maybe indicator is like loved ones, like parents or spouses or whomever, actually might see the changes before the individual themselves. You know, just really tiny minor differences in the way they're approaching situations or the way they're handling stress is oftentimes a big one. And there are lots of reasons for this. You know, Tobias mentioned sleep. Sleep is one of the indicators that actually improves. There's almost like a most immediate change there. And you have to remember, like, this treatment is helping neurons make new connections and build, you know, have, and it's called, the process is called entrainment, right, in your brain, where, you know, your neurons are making new connections and rewiring. So that's happening well after the treatment is over.
Yeah,
so
consolidation, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that's why we're here, because no one wants to make any false promises. And there's not, you know, this is a brand new treatment, so there's not a whole lot of research on it, but the results are there. I mean, it works, you mm-hmm. know, which is, I guess, why it's so exciting to me, particularly with, you know, how much we're facing in the tutoring world with exactly the type of behaviors that you're talking about. I mean, I think kids that can't stay on task, that lose focus after 15 minutes, and sleep is related too. It's interesting that you brought up the sleep, right, the fact that it impacts the way that they're able to rest. I mean, I think every parent can tell you that there's an integral relationship between the behavior of a kid and how much they've slept and like taken care of the body. You know, but that is a brain thing on its face. I mean, you know, whether we get to sleep or not has a whole lot to do with what's happening in our head.
Absolutely. And Alex, I think your point before, you know, about the evidence, right? Like there is, with TMS in particular, there is quite a bit of evidence showing how effective it is. And, you know, this is just taking TMS and being hyper-targeted, hyper-individualized. And as a result, we're seeing, you know, something that's far more effective, up to 3 times more effective.
Tobias, are there, I mean, I know it's extraordinarily kind of non-invasive. I'm wondering if are there any like potential risks at all with this?
So the one that might sound scary is that there's a very, very low seizure risk. Now, I want to put that in perspective. Depending on the literature you look at, and that literature is for TMS, which starts out and reaches a much higher intensity of the magnetic pulse. So the risk for that is somewhere between 1 in 10 and 1 in 100,000.
1 in 10,000 to 1 in 100,000, you mean, right?
Yeah. So either the Nintendo Switch or the Game Boy have a higher seizure risk than that. Now, in addition to that, we have 2 more, if not 3 more, guardrails. Number one, I do not only look at someone's brain scan, I also ask questions about their medical history. So if someone has a history of a seizure disorder, I'm very interested to know that. We can treat people who have a history of seizure disorder. That's fine. But we just need to be extra cautious and we need to dial it back a little bit more. And we can still get results. I also prefer to treat patients with seizure disorder when they're on a stable regimen and not just 2 weeks after they had their last seizure. So we want to just be cautious about it. Similar thing would be for bipolar disorder. We had a client with bipolar disorder. It's okay. We need to treat more carefully. And I would monitor very carefully, maybe together with outpatient psychiatrist, but also make sure that this client is on a stable medication regimen. And then this can be done. So seizure risk is a very rare, but, you know, still existing risk. And we're watching out for that.
Now, how would that compare to, like, say, VR, for instance? Because, I mean, isn't there kind of a seizure risk with VR?
I can't give you the exact figure with VR. This would be interesting to look up, but here's my educated guess. If the Game Boy has a higher seizure risk, VR will not fare better, right?
I would think so. For sure, I mean, not. It's some of the crazy games with the lights coming at you, and I, like when I've used the Oculus 2 or whatever, that's pretty intense. That's interesting, though, that it's roughly on par with video games.
It is. Now, I tell you what, there's like little side story. When I started my residency training in Germany, I was in this hospital that was modern at that time when it was built in the 70s. For me, it looked like an oil refinery. They had this 70s carpet design that had like a certain pattern to it. And people got a seizure from looking at that while on the stretcher, you know, so you can cause seizures in people who are susceptible to that, you know, with VR, with a Game Boy, with other things. We take good care of our patients. So as long as I know, we will put that risk far away.
So, Greg, I understand that your son was actually one of the first clients to try this. Could you kind of tell us about that experience and what was that like?
So, you know, like any parent who is dealing with one of their children who is displaying some behaviors that are challenging, you know, my son who's 5 is in kindergarten having really trouble, like just composing himself, really not really good impulse control, really emotional. He didn't get his way at school. He was shutting down. He was just having a really hard time. He's not diagnosed with anything, you know, formally yet, but as a parent in the mental health world, the writing was on the wall, right? And so my wife and I had him doing kind of the normal things that parents might be doing at his age, is, you know, occupational therapy, some sensory work, you know, exploring, having him see a therapist for some of the anxiety that he was displaying at school. Mm-hmm. And really nothing was working, honestly. So as luck were to be, right, like I was working on building this business kind of during this past, you know, the past 6 months, and we happened to be kind of opening up doors and ready to start taking patients as kind of issues with my son were kind of hitting the peak, and we're to the point where school was literally saying, you know what, like maybe it's good if he just did half a day and, you know, got his nap in that he really needed so desperately. And we're like, okay, well, you know, hold on. So basically after that meeting, I was like, all right, well, there's no reason not to do this at this point, not to do MERT, so to speak. There's, you know, very little downside. You know, the risk for him from a safety standpoint is not there. I understand the technology and I understand kind of how MERT works. So I'm not worried about kind of damaging my son at all. And so we tried it. And almost immediately, within a few sessions, we started to see some very real, concrete behavioral changes. And I will say that we didn't actually tell his school that we were doing it, which is really important. You know, I wanted to kind of see if there are changes globally that not just the parent might notice, you know.
Double blind.
So double blind, exactly right. With an N of one, of course. But, you know, at home, you know, he wasn't throwing the tantrums because one of his siblings were, you know, pushing his buttons and he was being redirected after one redirection, not 15. And he was able to like have really interesting conversations that he just wasn't open to before that. And then at school, we weren't getting phone calls or emails from the teacher literally every day saying he got in an argument with so-and-so, or he ran out of the classroom, or, you know, whatever he was doing. All those stopped. We're getting positive comments, you know, getting a postcard from the teacher saying, you know, Felix did XYZ on the playground and he was great. And Felix, his name, you know, actually came back, I think after the first week of doing treatment, and said, oh, I learned all about math today. I really liked it. Like, wait a second, what is happening right now? It was a big deal. You know, he now, we could see his joy as a 5-year-old, as it should be, come out, where we weren't seeing that. We were just seeing stress and a ball of kind of emotional dysregulation before. And now we have like a little kid who is, you know, loving going to school and really enjoying it. And all of this really changed within, you know, weeks, right? We're talking 10 sessions and he's still doing it. I think we're at 20 sessions now. We stretched it out longer than what a normal patient might, but it's just because we had that really kind of because we can and because of circumstance. But he still continues to do really, really well. And I think one important piece of this is we're not just doing this in a vacuum. We still have all the other components, right? We still have the OT in place. We have him actually enrolled him in like jujitsu and some other things that would allow him to kind of get some of these other sensory stuff going on. But the difference is now these other things that we have in place, he's actually retaining what they're trying to teach him and retaining the strategies that we're giving him. Whereas before he was getting, you know, a fraction of whatever it was. And so it's opened a lot of doors for him.
Here are a few things that stuck out to me after the second segment of our conversation, which focused on the treatment itself. What's interesting to me is how quickly it is effective in terms of producing a change and a permanent change in your brain waves. It, basically, the efficiency of your brain. They said it, you can notice it in actually only a few sessions. It does get you thinking as to, well, how does one sort of quantify their level of focus, their level of brain efficiency? A lot of it is perception itself, and that can be very difficult to tell with children who are, if you're on the younger side, live in a very imaginative world. The line between fiction and reality is often blurry. Or teenagers, where you're lucky if you get any story, fictional or non-fictional at all, from them. So it can be difficult to parse out that information, but I think this might be a way of doing that, a way of quantifying what's happening in the head and of really getting that down. You know, where is the struggle particularly? Is it with concentration? Is it with executive function? Is it with processing? Really figuring out what that is, isolating that, and then quantifying really improvements. And then being able to measure those, like tangibly, in a way I think that's perhaps more scientific than some of the other modalities that are available. The other thing that really stuck out to me was Greg's experience with his own kid. And I have to say that I really identified with that, you know, with my own son being about the same age and really struggling with a lot of the same sort of behavioral issues, you know, just not really knowing how to cope with his emotion. And I think this is a very common issue, but having a hard time dealing with discipline and really reacting in those circumstances in ways that are inappropriate and unmanageable, very much unmanageable. But then sort of feeling like, you know, that there's something else that's bothering him underneath it, whether that's some sort of sensory perception issue, and I'm fairly certain that our son is dealing with something along those lines, or in terms of the sleep that he's getting, or in terms of his physical health, or in terms of his psychological sort of underpinnings. Feeling like, where are those issues coming from? You know, what can we do to help him improve at a very critical sort of young age? It really sets the foundation for so much else that happens with brain development. I got to say, thinking very strongly about taking him in there and getting him evaluated and getting at least the EEG that they were talking about that I got myself, just to see what does it look like out of sheer morbid curiosity, if nothing else. Because Greg's experience with his son sounds like a fairly typical sort of result for them. So I think really getting ahead of things on that would be wise. So, you know, frankly, this is something I'll be talking about with my wife. Greg, how would you place MERT in the kind of cognitive landscape for, you know, today's clients? How does it sort of stack up? I mean, place it in terms of the, you know, what else is out there?
In terms of improving cognition, is that what we're talking about? Well, I think that's really important to say that it doesn't necessarily improve cognition. I think what it does is really allow someone who is previously kind of unable to access the processing or the attention or whatever else is going on, because the way the brain was kind of unsynchronized. Tobias, what's the right word on that? I don't know. Not in synchrony with one another.
Right.
It allows that synchrony to occur. And then when those connections occur, you know, think of it as like, you know, when a brain wave is traveling from the back of the brain to the front of the brain, you know, it's either taking a long, windy country road or it's taking a highway, right? And so, you know, when people's brains are in synchrony, it's every connection they have are all long, windy country roads, and they're not getting to where they need to be effectively, and therefore the person's not functioning correctly. And what MERT is doing is creating a highway for that person. And so now they're able to actually access what they need to access efficiently and perform more effectively. And as far as I know, there really isn't anything else going on. You know, when I'm doing cognitive remediation with people, we are addressing core cognitive skills like processing speed and attention, and in a really kind of time, like takes a long time, up to 15 weeks to make meaningful change in any one particular area. And the way I see MERT fitting in within the cognitive kind of performance world is that it just accelerates the ability to do these things.
Gotcha. Interesting stuff. Yeah, it's physiologically sort of giving it, it's like giving you what, training wheels, or what's the best metaphor for this?
Well, I like to think about tuning an instrument. I really like that because, look, this is the hardware you got, and there's still obviously differences from person to person, but it's a good idea with the hardware you have, whether you have a Steinway or a Yamaha piano, you know, like you still want to get it into tune. Sounds better. And so in a way, we want to set a foundation, right? I mean, the important thing that I also want to emphasize is that we love therapists and people who do cognitive remediation and parents and everyone who's doing that hard work day to day. If we can make things a bit easier by setting a good foundation, helping to set a good foundation, then we've done a lot, you know? So we're not taking a CBT therapist or like an addiction counselor's client away. That's not what we're planning to do. We want to work hand in hand. That's actually the ideal case where we have a team, someone that knows, that can ask us what's going on, what we're trying to do. But we want to help people to do their work. And it's really true, I see that often in addiction, that you need to get your clients into a certain state of mind to actually do the therapeutic work. Mm-hmm. And so you were asking before about trends, right? That's definitely one of the trends where MERT is going into the field of addiction. That would be one of them, like trying to treat clients early on in their journey to sobriety, to help them do the actual sobriety, like the work that enables you to form new habits, make better decisions. So trying to treat early here is a trend. Mm-hmm. Another trend is treatment of autism. There are definitely a few centers doing MERT that have a lot of patients with autism. Now, treatment there is a little bit different in that with neurodevelopmental disorders like autism, it tends to require more treatments. Now, so instead of 20, we're looking to be 30. We might expand that a little bit, or that's a case where we might think about checking again in 1 or 2 years and seeing if there are still flags, something that we can treat.
What do scans look like for kids with ASD, or anyone really? I mean, are those distinct?
So yes and no. You'd see a lot of what we call slow wave activity and often like a poorly formed alpha frequency. So yes, there are typical changes, but you're bringing up a really good point. The change in thinking that I had to make when looking at MERT is that our scans are agnostic, as in we look at the scan first and we look if there are treatment targets that we know we can with high probability affect. And we also kind of like know what neurotypical looks like. And that's what we're looking for. We're not starting out with a diagnosis. So if you're coming in and saying like, oh, well, I have ADHD. Well, true. I think we can most likely help you. But I'm not making my treatment decision based on you telling me all the symptoms that are consistent with ADHD. I would still first look at your scan. In fact, you would not even have to tell me what you are necessarily dealing with in your life that brings me into my door. I would look at your scan first. And I see if they are actually targets that we can treat. In the next step, I'll talk to a client and ask, like, so what brings you in? Like, what's getting in your way? Like, what do you like to work on or to see addressed? And I can see if there's a match. And again, if someone has a very neurotypical, good looking brain scan, and by that, I mean, okay, there are very little targets here. It's going to be hard to see in the next scan after treatment or in the middle of treatment, see many changes based on what I see here. Yeah. I would not necessarily encourage you
to do that because like there might be little room.
Do I see that a lot?
No.
You're not going to cast a leg that's not broken.
Yeah.
That's part of the Hippocratic.
Even though I want to say casting the leg that's not broken is the more damaging thing than doing MERT on someone who has a very good looking scan. Because another reality is there are many treatment centers that will offer and perform therapy. Well, question is, do we call it therapy then? It's more like a cognitive performance enhancing. So, you know, we can call that brain optimization. There are people who rely on their brain a lot who would like to think faster, clearer, better, and shape it up. Exactly.
Greg, if you have one parting piece of advice for parents of students who are looking for MERT or other cognitive treatments, what would that be? I mean, so if I'm a parent who has a child who could potentially benefit from this, I mean, what's sort of a parting piece of advice you would give that parent?
Yeah, so, you know, if I were to give a person any advice, it would be to really look at the big picture and try to get a full understanding of like what is causing kind of the challenges that they're experiencing with their son or daughter. And how can understanding more about a person's brain through the EEG or brain health assessment give them a better understanding? Then I guess thinking about the priorities, like how could not having to take medication for whatever it is, depression, anxiety, ADHD, and still having the more being symptom free, how can that allow them to increase functionality and kind of be happier in the case of my son, right? And be able to kind of get the most out of whatever they're kind of working toward, whether it be school or work or just living independently. And that's really what this treatment does. It's opening the doors for all these other things to kind of be put in place in a really remarkable way, right? In a safe, non-pharmaceutical, non-invasive manner, which I just can't stress enough.
Here are some final conclusions that I had after my conversation with Tobias and with Greg. There are a few things that stick out to me about MERT at the end of the day. Number one really is, for me, practical concerns of actually doing this, of getting my son there, and if he does go on with the therapy, 25 sessions, you know, hours at a time down at Stanford, you know, how would I make that happen practically, you know, taking that up school? I guess, on the other hand, we're talking about a permanent change, so it's not like something that you would need to do on an ongoing basis after you hit those 25 sessions, theoretically. So, you know, I think that would be kind of a one-time investment, if you will, of time and money to do that. But I guess it's kind of interesting that that's what my brain is circling on in the end. The second conclusion that I had after the conversation really is about risks and really how low they are, you know, when one thinks about doing something with your brain. I think that instantly sort of puts us on a defensive posture. It's a very critical organ and something you certainly don't want to toy around with too much, again, particularly with your kids. But I think the invasiveness of it is surprisingly low. I mean, with magnetic pulsing, you know, talking about, well, seizures are the biggest threat, and the seizures that are equal to playing video games, essentially, you know, much less VR. I would really love to see the stats on that, because VR seems a lot more stress-inducing to the eye and to the brain than video games certainly do. So, you know, other than that, the risks are really almost none. And you're enacting a sort of permanent shift in your brain waves too. So the kind of risk-reward really sticks out to me in this therapy, again, versus other modalities. I mean, there's really very little risk. Compared to the rewards that you're talking about are permanent shifts in your brain's ability to function and to process information and to concentrate. Boy, those are big wins. So again, I think that's why I continue to gravitate towards this type of therapy. One final thing that sticks out to me after my conversation with Greg and Tobias is really the boundary to entering into this type of therapy really being about educating myself about it and being able to speak to it and to be able to actually translate this information to someone else who has never experienced it at all or been at that center. Because I remember before I went there being highly skeptical, you know, thinking, oh, what is this? What am I getting into here? This sounds a little bit like, you know, slipping the rabbit hole and going into Wonderland, you know, with magnetic pulsing of the brain. I mean, you're just thinking about it that way. But then, you know, getting the center and boots on the ground, it being an entirely different thing than my expectation. So being able to speak to someone who has never had experience with this and that doesn't really understand the true possibilities here and what kind of shifts this therapy can actually have, again, permanently on your brain, I think that is something that I've got to contend with now at this point. As a layman and somebody who is, you know, I'm not a scientist. I am not a psychiatrist. I am not going to be able to explain, you know, the principles of MERT therapy, but on a very basic level, being able to communicate the possibilities here, I think is really critical at this point for me.